SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964, and at our website, stevebick.com. End of the week. And I guess the biggest action, looking forward to the weekend, Gulfstream. We'll talk to Mike Welch later. You've got the four graded stakes and the Mike Charmer. There's the... You know, the winter season at Gulfstream after kind of the I don't want to say frivolous, but the the gaiety and the pageantry of the Cup de Caribe last Sunday and also the claiming crown, kind of down to brass tacks, as they say, tomorrow at Gulfstream. So we'll talk to Mike, and we'll talk to him in the third hour. Looking forward to that. Going to bring in Chad Schechsnader from New Orleans. And the Fairgrounds Louisiana action, as we had discussed with Marcus Hirsch, Thanksgiving week, the classics and the whole card of the Louisiana stakes action tomorrow. And Chad, who's doing that Fairgrounds analysis show, he put together a mammoth, as he said, I overanalyzed this card like none before. So we'll get some opinions from Chad and check in with him. He keeps a great pulse day to day on everything going on around FGNO, Fairgrounds New Orleans. So we'll talk to him. And then there's an assortment of interesting racing. I kind of took a little bit. I printed a bunch of PPs that I was interested in. New York, we've got the two rich stallion stake races, 500,000 in the stallion series, with the boys race tomorrow. We'll talk to Nick Tamaro, top of hour two. The boys race, I Dream Bigger looks very, very tough in there, 5-2, but it's a 14-horse field, and Dream Bigger, you got to expect, is going to be up near the lead, so maybe some pressure unfolds, maybe that opens things up. I don't know, though. Dream Bigger seems very tough in that boys race. The girls race is a bit of a hodgepodge, to be honest, and you got the first-time starter, a couple of first-time starters, Terranova, Charlie Baker, and then you've got that big Q who, I mean, if she runs back the Gary Gullo, Duchess View Farm, big brown filly, she runs back to that Key Sense race, and forget it. They're all running for minor placings. So then there's some other solid starters, and there's a straight allowance tomorrow, New York. A couple of them, actually. Then the state bred allowance that's okay. And, we're at that transition period with the, as great as that Aqueduct fall meeting was. And everybody, even those that love to dump on New York, even they seem to have acknowledged what a terrific fall it was. And, the winter, you got, you get a certain percentage of the population leaving, and we got to talk about that. I probably won't delve into it much today, but next week I may have to surprise Dave Grenig with a call. And I guess we could pause here for a second because there is news to be woven into the weekend preview action. And on the New York side of things, the couple of pieces that Dave has handled the last couple of days, and not only are horses leaving for Florida, Some may not be back. And Kieran McLaughlin, the story that Dave wrote about Kieran heading down to Florida and, you know, just being completely dispirited by what has gone on with the Department of Labor, both the federal and state Department of Labor, had this discussion with Joe Applebaum. And, you know, we also have touched on it with trainers when they've come through, including Gullo, in fact, when we talked to him a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, there's a couple of different things about the situation. The workman's comp scenario has at least stabilized, it seems. Not that it's any less expensive and a heavy-handed expense for New York outfits. But these Labor Department fines and characterizations are so outlandish. And the things that I'm always disturbed when you see nothing really gets me worked up more than, you know, things that are unfair. And there's been a very unfair characterization of the trainers involved in this situation. And if you're just going to see a headline and not and just trade off of assumptions and hearsay and you know, not spend a moment reading or listening to the whys and wherefores, it's really unfair. And Kieran McLaughlin's and virtually everybody that is being, you know, beaten up by the labor departments, they've all got stable workforces that have been with them, you know, forever. And even, you know, even the Department of Labor even said to Kieran, "Oh no, your help said they've been treated great. There were no complaints." In one case, Kieran explains that he's being investigated by one department for overpayment and one for underpayment. I mean, this is just ridiculous. And as you heard from Joe Applebaum and Kieran talked about it, and so did Gullo on the show, if you put personnel on the van to take your horse to Aqueduct, they're going and they spend part of their day in Queens, well, then it's a different pay scale, and there's different. I guess everybody who seems to be constantly on the attack, I guess every one of them has perfectly dotted every I and crossed every T and has never, you know, never made any kind of clerical error or misinterpreted any of the kinds of rules that are involved here. Something came out in Grenig's piece yesterday that I hadn't even heard specifically. And that is that, you know, some of the H-2B visa requirements, H-2B visa holders can't go on the horse van. They have to go in vehicles that have a seatbelt. Which, you know, okay, but it's still like another. I mean, there's one wrinkle after another involved in this. It's crazy, and it just feels like, you know, these labor departments, both the state of New York and federal, are just using, you know, using the backstretch as a pinata. You know, and it's just a very, very frustrating. And, you know, the way people, the assumptions that have been made about what has gone on, it just shows that nobody spends 2 minutes actually absorbing the facts. But that symptom is widespread on a lot of topics. Speaking of putting personnel on the van to go from Belmont to Aqueduct, the other story this week that we'll visit before the end of the season. This decision starting January 1st to end training and stabling at Aqueduct in favor of, the backstretch at Belmont, which has been undergoing, steady renovations, new barns built, barns renovated, etc. And there's, there's tons of stalls available at Belmont. And the Horsemen, independent of NYTHA, actually sent a letter, saying that they protest the concept and they don't like the idea of not training on the Aqueduct main. But in fact, Mick Peterson, who had just spent time with in Arizona, Peterson says that the concern that's voiced there is in fact the opposite is true. Peterson says that not training on that track will make it easier through the winter for Glenn Kozak's crew to keep it maintained as best as can be. So, I mean, that the ins and outs of that are can be discussed, but there's obviously considerable cost savings. Although NYRA's still going to have to, they're still going to pay for, horses coming back and forth. But, if they don't have to, maintain the barn area at Aqueduct, there's got to be considerable savings involved in that. So this will be discussed further next week. But those two stories, Dave Greinich last week when we went into the big Cigar Mile weekend, Dave said, well, we'll talk to you in, talk to you in February. But in fact, I want to get to Dave on these stories. Before we go through the rest of the lineup and prospective action for the weekend, the California news that we followed up after the conversation with Tony yesterday, the CHRB meeting, they did pass the much more stringent crop use rules. And there's a lot yet to happen. There's a comment period, and if there's any changes, then there's got to be another comment period. So, I mean, this is not happening, in 2 weeks when Santa Anita opens. But jocks under the rule that they passed, 5-0 vote, jocks can use the crop twice in succession and no more than a total of 6 times over the course of a race. And the interesting wrinkle here is the elimination of overhand stick use. So no, raising of the arm and conventional cropping, can't raise it above your shoulder. And riders have to have hands on the rein or on the horse's neck. I mean, basically, it's kind of down to, using the stick on the shoulder and prompting lead change, that kind of thing. Well, next week we'll get rider input, and I don't see how. I'm not gonna go backwards on this. I mean, this is going to be extended more widely. Not it's only one direction to go on this, and I think everybody's gonna have to comply and adjust. The interesting story from yesterday, if you didn't see it, Steve Anderson with the fiscal year report that the CHRB offered, in terms of recorded fatalities in California, second lowest total on record from July 1st to June 30th, the fiscal year, 144, so 12 a month on average. And the best year was 2018 with 138. So for all the hubbub, there were only six more fatalities over the last year than previous. Jay Privman is going to join us next and catch up with Jay. We didn't talk to him last week. Get his Remsen and LoSal Futurity postscripts. The George Wolfe finalists as well. Ed Burghardt's retiring. We're going to talk to Ed in hour three. And much more. Jeff Siegel, the whole thing. Hammer as well. Back with Jay after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American fall crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our Racehorse Development Fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
All in the gate.
It's a great weekend of day and night racing at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The daytime winter thoroughbred meet wraps up with closing day set for Sunday, December 15th. And after thrilling wins by the Bob Baffert-trained duo of Bast and Thousand Words, get ready for more top two-year-olds in action in the Soviet Problem Stakes on Saturday and the King Gloria Stakes on Sunday. Plus, don't forget the mandatory payouts for key wagers like the Pick 6, Players Pick 5, Super High 5, and more on closing day. Looking to enjoy the races in style? We have exactly what you're looking for with a day of luxury and fine dining in the beautiful Vessels Club. Or take a casual approach and visit Burghardt's, our brand new sports bar and wagering room now featuring the NFL Sunday Ticket. And racing fans, this is the final weekend for the retiring Ed Burghardt as track announcer at Los Alamitos. He'll be calling a final champion of champions in Los Alamitos 2 million Futurity this weekend. Los Alamitos will have an Ed Burghardt bobblehead giveaway on Saturday and a meet and greet with the legendary announcer on Sunday after the last day race. It'll be a memorable closing weekend. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus, as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch.
We're back at
the
races.
You're a bad banana with a greasy black beard.
Coming up on 20 into hour one.
Jay Pribben joining us. And, Jay, we just heard the closing weekend ad for Lo Sal. And, boy, it's Ed Burghardt weekend. I love it. I'm going to talk to Ed later.
Good morning to you. And, everything that's going on with Ed's been really great. There was a going-away party for him that Ed Allred, the track owner, threw for him at the track after the races last evening. There's no night racing. There's no quarter horse racing on Thursday night. So after the daytime card ended, there was a nice party for him. It was really a lot of fun and a lot of good speeches. Kurt Hoover was the master of ceremonies, and there were some just really nice things and deserved things said about Ed. The one thing, everybody knows how he's so synonymous with Los Alamitos for nearly 40 years that he's worked there now. What a great job he does, not only calling the races, but he's a terrific winemaker as well. But the thing that I just want to salute him for before you get him on is the guy just is filled with integrity. I mean, everything he does is for what's right and good for the sport. He doesn't cut corners. He's just a model of integrity, and I just really admire everything that he's done. I'm happy he's going out on his terms, and he'll have a nice retirement. And Steve, I don't know if you know this, even though he's not going to obviously be calling the races anymore, Michael Rona's taking over for him both day and nighttime. Ed's going to still do the line for the night quarter horse races from his he's retiring. He's had a home in Prescott, Arizona for a long time, and that's where he and his wife Marcia are going to retire to, but permanently. But he's still going to do the line from there. So it's like he can't quite give it all up.
Well, and it's funny because I can remember it's got to be maybe my first trip to Lo Sal, like 5 or 6 years ago, and he was supposedly on the verge of retiring then, and he just couldn't do it.
Well, there were actually, he came really close to retiring about 2 years ago, and Ed Allred just pretty much made him an offer he couldn't refuse, and he decided, you know what, I'll just do this for a little bit longer, and it extended till the end of this year. But I think he's mentally now ready to go. He's and to enjoy his retirement. He just loves the game so much. He still wants to keep his hand in it at that level. But the day to day grind of doing all the other stuff that he does there. I mean, he does about 18 jobs at that track in terms of the videos that they do for workouts, like I said, the morning line, calling races. During the meet now, when they have the daytime thoroughbred meet, he hosts the pre-race chat that he does with different guests each day. And I think it's really neat that on Sunday, his final guest is going to be Michael Rona, who's going to be taking over for him. So that's a really nice tribute.
And it's funny, I saw in Steve Anderson's piece that it was, it was going to be kind of a surprise. He was holding back on who it was going to be. And I thought, it's got to be Doc Allred. But Michael, a perfect choice. And you mentioned Doc putting on the party. And, last week while I was there, Jay, we can use it as a segue into your post-futurity analysis. Enough can't be said in support of what Doc Allred does and how he operates. He's like a bastion of track ownership goodwill.
Very much so. I mean, there's been a lot of, as everybody well knows, there's been a lot of crises in California racing over the last few years, and he's stepped up every time to try and do the right thing, beginning with back when Hollywood Park met its demise, and there was a stabling need, so he added stables to Los Alamitos. There was a racetrack circumference need, so they expanded. He and then the late Brad McKenzie oversaw the expansion of Los Alamitos from a 5/8 track to they added a way to make it a mile or nearly a mile so that they could run proper daytime thoroughbred races, and that's why you can run races like the Starlet and the Futurity there now. Every time that there's been an issue like that where the entire circuit would benefit, he has stepped up and done the right thing.
Yeah, and was then shabbily treated earlier this year when it came to the date discussions. It's just bizarre. Let's talk about that futurity. And I was lucky enough to be on hand. And the Starlet had for years been one of my favorite races, Jay, and the futurity with it together. It's been so much fun to go. And Baffert won't allow anybody else to win one while it's at Los Al.
No, there have been six futurities at Los Alamitos since Hollywood Park closed, and for the sixth straight time, a Baffert trainee won it. As you know, Thousand Words won it. Steve, when I started doing my analysis of the race, I wanted to do a little deeper dive about Thousand Words because his career just reminded me of what I thought had happened with McKenzie, but I wanted to look it up and just be certain of things, and the parallels were pretty striking. They both won their debuts at Santa Anita the final weekend of October in a sprint against maidens, and then in their second start stretched out for the mile and a 16th two-turn Los Alamitos futurity, and both won. Now, in the case of McKenzie, he got placed first on a DQ of his stablemate Solomini, but still, they both went from a sprint at Santa Anita, and then exactly six weeks later for both, stretched out and won the Los Alamitos futurity, and the buyer figures that both got were very similar. McKenzie got a 92 the year that he won the race, which was in 2017, and Thousand Words got a 91. So I'm not saying Thousand Words is going to end up being as good as McKenzie is, but so far his career has been almost exactly like him, and I like the way he held off the Nodor to win the race, so it was a good, solid race, considering it was only his second lifetime start, first against winners, first around two turns, first in a stake. It was a good performance.
And you know, seeing him up close in person, Jay, too, I was impressed. He's a big, long-bodied. He's got that aircraft carrier kind of a look to him. And you would think with maturity and you know, just the way Baffert, as he explained with us on Wednesday, you know, just handles these horses and, you know, seems to, you know, just go by touch and feel. It seems like, you know, the decisions have been good and have been, you know, productive. I came away very impressed. I think a lot of people had sort of shifted their attention to High Velocity going into the race.
Okay.
I'll take
your word for it.
Yeah, it was just a dialogue. There just were a lot of people that were, you know, were thinking that the spot was, you know, was High Velocity's coming out opportunity.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, we'll see what happens down the line. On the last Saturday, High Velocity was third best of four.
Well, and of course, gotta also acknowledge, you know, Brad Blaine Wright with Anno D'Or, who you know, backed up his Breeders' Cup effort quite nicely. Turned the attention to the boys out in New York and the Remsen. This was interesting. There was a lot going on in this race.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this race, Steve. I mean, because on paper, it really didn't look like a very strong field. The buyer figure was okay, an 86. You'd like to see a little bit better than that late in the year for two-year-olds. But the thing you can say in the favor of Shotsky are that he's never taken a step back on buyer figures. This was his fourth start, and from his first to his second to third, and then third to fourth. Each time, he's taken a step forward. He's obviously bred to love long-distance racing. He's by a Breeders' Cup Classic winner in Blame, and his dam sire's Bluegrass Cat, who was second in both the Derby and the Belmont. So those are things that are in his favor. I just don't know how good this field was. Aja Weed, who was a pretty well-beaten fourth in the Breeders' Futurity, kind of ran on for second. He just seems like he's sort of a one-paced kind of horse. He made nice headway, but when you look at where he was in the Breeders' Futurity, I think you could make the fairly strong argument that the Breeders' Futurity was a much stronger race at the top than this race was. But that's one of the nice things about, you know, two-year-olds turning three. They can certainly move forward. And in the case of both Shotsky and Ajawi, they certainly look like they want to run as far as you can write races. Even though Shotsky, his margin was being cut into at the end, you know, on the gallop out, he still stayed in front. I think he might have just been lollygagging out there. And he's just kind of a big lumbering type. I just think he wants to just gallop along as long as you can go. And I think Ajawi, who doesn't have as much early speed, but I think he's kind of the same mold. He's just going to keep coming and coming and coming. I just don't know. They're going to need to both, I think, take steps forward next spring to be considered top Derby prospects. The rest of the field, just to me, was just not up to top level at this point. And, you know, maybe they'll get better, but there was nothing else in the race that really impressed me coming out of there, to be perfectly honest. I thought Chase Tracker, who finished third, had a really easy trip, and he hung in there well to be third after looking he was going to really chuck it at the top of the lane. But I thought that he didn't really show me enough to think that he's among the top of this division at this point. So I thought the two at the top at Los Alamitos were better than the two at the top in the Remsen.
Well, and we certainly are used to, you know, the West Coast 2 to 3 year olds kind of leading the, you know, being the engine on the road to Derby train. And so far we're, I don't see anything that's not fair. I suppose there's.
I think it's kind of a jump ball right now.
Yeah.
I mean, just last weekend, I thought the Los Alamitos Futuro was a better race, but you know, there's just so many questions about this division right now because you had a pretty unsatisfying Breeders' Cup Juvenile. It was run over a deep, tiring track where a couple of the obviously Dennis's Moment lost his best chance as soon as the gate opened, and you know, Storm the Court ran a gritty race to win it. And the nice thing is that the horse who was second in that race came back and ran well again in the Los Alamitos Futurity. So from that standpoint, that race, that form held up in that one case, but it didn't hold up in the case of Wrecking Crew, who was awful on Saturday, and he was third in the Breeders' Cup. So the Breeders' Cup was just kind of a strange race. Scabbard didn't fire. You know, Dennis's Moment went to his face at the start of the race. So I think this is a much more wide open kind of scenario with this group than we've seen in heading into the winter than we've seen in the last few years, where it looked like there were maybe 3 or 4 standouts. I think you can cast a wider net at this point, just with this crop.
Well, and of course, you know, we've got Maxfield sidelined. There'll be
right.
A lot of excitement and eagerness to see Dennis's Moment come back after the first of the year down at Gulfstream for Dale Romans. And, you know, some of the things that, you know, some of the sidebars that'll feed into this.
I'll tell you another horse who I'm going to be eager to see get a shot at this is Structor.
Right.
Because there's no reason why he shouldn't run on the dirt. And he'll get his chance early next year to show if he can transfer his turf form to the dirt. But he's obviously done nothing wrong to this point from a performance standpoint. So he's an interesting one to remember and not overlook.
Jay, there's no dirt graded stakes for the 2 year olds. We do have the Springboard Mile on Sunday, but I'm sure you've been mulling over Eclipse decisions. The 2 year old males, tis the law with the stubbing of the toe, with his opportunity last week. That situation, it seems like people are kind of a little bit mum about what their, you know, what their leanings are at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak for myself. I think in the absence of anything better, you have to go to the championship race that everybody ran in. And that was the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I mean, to me, the only other horse you can make a case for is Structor, for winning his Breeders' Cup race on the grass. But I don't know how you can make a case at this point for Tis the Law or Dennis's Moment. I mean, it's unfortunate what happened to Dennis's Moment in the Breeders' Cup, but it happened. And, he got beat. And then in the case of Storm the Court, I mean, I know everybody's like, oh, well, he was 30-1 or whatever. Maybe, but he did win the race. And let's face it, he didn't get a fair chance at all in the Del Mar Futurity. I mean, you don't know what he would have done that day. I don't know if he would have won or finished sixth, but you don't know because, Eight Rings took care of him an eighth of a mile into the race. So there's no real... If you're going to give Dennis's Moment a mulligan for the Breeders' Cup and in support of him, then I think you have to, out of fairness, give Storm the Court a mulligan for what happened to him in the Del Mar Futurity, which was of no fault of his. He just was an innocent bystander to a mugging.
Yeah. Well, on the two-year-old front, before we talk about the Wolf Award, I'll just don't know if I'll have another chance, but I mentioned the Springboard Mile on Sunday, and the big headliners would be Answer In, Brad Cox, the Dialed In Gelding, Bob LaPenta, and Matiket Salcumin, 5-2 favorite, and Rowdy Yates is back making his seventh start already, the morning line colt for Steve Asmussen and the emergent LNN Racing people. So don't forget about the Springboard on Sunday.
A point scoring race towards the Kentucky Derby.
Absolutely.
Which
and
we
so,
will have our analysis of.
Excellent. Excellent.
The Road to the Derby page at drf.com.
America's Turf Authority.
Check your local listings for stations and IDs.
Don't forget, America's Turf Authority since when?
Oh, Marty McGee was in elementary school.
And by the way, this is the first opportunity we've got. It's almost a week later, but happy 60th to you.
Oh, God. Thank you. Yeah, you, me, and Marty, we were already at the dark side. I think now it's like getting blacker.
Exactly. Exactly.
I said to my friends and to my wife, it's like, what the hell happened? I was just 32.
Exactly. Exactly.
What the hell?
Well, we as I can hear Gary Young saying to all of us, a couple of ticks past midnight. There it is.
He's not quite there yet. He's still got a couple of years to go.
Well, let's talk about the announcement yesterday, the George Wolf Award, which means a lot to the riders. It's a unique award, and every rider would love to include it in their career accolades.
Very much so. That's because it's voted on by their peers, and I don't think there's any greater accolade you can receive than getting an award that's voted on by your peers. It doesn't matter what endeavor you're in, but for jockeys, it is the George Wolf Memorial Jockey Award that Santa Anita has played host to since 1950. If you missed it from yesterday, the five finalists this year are Tyler Bays, Javier Castellano, Chris Amey, James Graham, and Luis M. Quinones. They're the five finalists. Obviously Castellano is the most accomplished of that quintet, being a multiple Eclipse Award winner, Hall of Fame member, 12 Breeders' Cup victories, et cetera, et cetera. But the award encompasses more than that, and that's why you see people like, for instance, last year, Scott Stevens winning it. It's not just about what you do on the racetrack, it's also about what you do off the track and your contributions to the sport. And that's what makes it such a great award. It's not like just sort of rubber stamping Eclipse Awards. And Javier Castellano is absolutely deserving of this award, but I think they have a really good cross section of people from around the country who are all well thought of by their peers. And I think this is going to be whoever ends up being the winner of the five this year is going to be a deserving person to put up on that long and illustrious roster that they have at Santa Anita. And, Steve, one of my favorite things that they do each year at Santa Anita is the presentation of the Wolf Award, because you get all the riders and the winner's circle surrounding that year's winner, and a lot of guys who are retired come to the track that day to show their support for the winner. It's just a really nice ceremony, and it's something I always look forward to each year.
Well, and I think this year the jockeys and jeans coordinated with the presentation too, and so it was perfect from that standpoint. Raised a lot of money, and so yeah, there's it's one of the special things that is out there in the sport that you always see how overwhelming it is to every recipient. It's invariably a moving ceremony. I was there. I've been there for two, Mike Luzzi. And then I got to think back to who the other one was, but Luzzi was just, it meant so much to him. And, you know, especially in light of him coming back from, you know, injuries that, you know, doctors told him he'd never ride again. So,
right.
Breed.
I remember when Don McBeth won it, you know, and it was 9 days before he passed. That was an incredibly emotional ceremony because it was obvious that, you know, his time was short, but he came out and was there for it, and it was a really great afternoon to see him honored that way. And I remember when Dean Coutts won it, who had health problems and unfortunately came back again later, but he was well enough to be at Santa Anita the year that he won it. The right kind of people rewarded more often than not. And you see what I like about it is that you see, like in the case of Scott Stevens or Dean Coutts, people who have maybe plied their trade largely outside of the marquee racetracks in the country, but have fashioned respected careers, are well liked and well respected by their peers, and get the tribute that they deserve for what they've accomplished for their years in the saddle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just looking at the recent list, Scott Stevens, Jose Ferrar, Stuart Elliott, Victor Espinoza, Mike Luzzi, Corey Lannery, Mario Pino, Ramon, Garrett Gomez in 2011, Calvin Burrell, John Velasquez, Rich Migliori, John Court, Mark Guidry, Ray Sabile, and so many more. Jay, we're winding down, and we've got the big season ender next week, although we will do a show on the 23rd because they're drawing opening day at Santa Anita on the 21st. So we'll be able to look ahead to opening day, the Malibu, the La Brea, and more.
Yes, that I'm looking forward to that. That draw on the 21st, they're going to they'll get a lot of the That card is always just a great card, that opening day card at Santa Anita with the Malibu, the La Brea, the San Antonio's that day, the Mathis Brothers Mile. So there'll be plenty to talk about then.
Jay, have a terrific weekend. I appreciate it.
All right. You too, Steve. Take care. Thanks so much.
DRF Pribman, everybody. Jay Pribman. Let's take a break. Chad Schechsnader is going to join us from New Orleans. We'll get some of his highlights from the Louisiana Champions Day card, lots of labreds, and invariably there's a $110 winner on this card somewhere. Let's see if Chad can't find it. Nick Tamaro, Rick Hammerly, Ed DeRosa, Ed Burghardt, Mike Welch, Jeff Siegel. Lots to do. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Whether at home, at the track, or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BIK, that's BYK, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on every
everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Old Mr. Kringle is soon gonna jingle the bells that'll tingle all your troubles away. Everybody's waiting for the man with the bag, 'cause Christmas is coming again. He's got a sleigh full, it's not gonna stay full. He's got stuff to drop at every stop of the way. Everybody's waiting for the man with the bag, 'cause Christmas is coming again. He'll be here.
We're back at the races.
The prayers that you've made through the year. You'll get
about 15 to the top of the hour. The amazing K-Star. So great. This and Wheel of Fortune. Wheel of Fortune. Love. Reaching down to New Orleans, we talked extensively yesterday with Steve Haskin about. It's funny, I was sitting working this morning and I heard the replay. You know, sitting on the headset and on the side of the desk, and I heard that set of, you know, the travel log that that Haskin and I offered. But neither of us know New Orleans or fairgrounds like Chad Schexnader, who joins us now. Chad, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you.
I'm so glad that it's funny. You sent me that note about the podcast. You're doing the Fairgrounds New Orleans cast, and I had already thought to reach out to you with this big Louisiana heavy card, and mostly full fields, and as we discussed with Marcus Hirsch a couple of weeks ago before opening, the Louisiana bred action is, really important, particularly even though the Churchill meet is over and the Churchill horses have moved down there, the ones that are coming there. But, you see a card like this and you realize, how valuable the La Bred program is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's actually a little rainy. I'm looking outside right now. It's a little overcast, foggy, but they expect to be, I don't think they'll be on the turf today, Steve, but I think they'll be on the turf tomorrow. But the Louisiana Bred Champions Day is something that I think it's in its 29th year now at the fairgrounds, always in December, always around that second weekend, and certainly gives horsemen a chance down here to run for some big purses with the La Breds. And it's a healthy group of La Breds this year. And, last year we had a lot of rain on this day and all the turf races were rained off. So a lot of these horses run back the next year. And this year, the ones on the turf will get their chance to go. And some good races coming up tomorrow. And thanks for mentioning the podcast. We're doing that once a week down here now. for Fairgrounds, myself and Mike Diliberto, who is the Fairgrounds clocker and morning line odds maker. Mike's been around. Mike's seen all 29 champions days and probably made the morning line for him for at least 25 of those. So it's fun. You know, we're a little bit different take. We're just talking about the stakes races and maiden special weights. And we're going to have a guest on, try to have a guest on in a second segment each week. But, yeah, it's going good.
Where do people go to find it?
So it's on iTunes. You can download it on iTunes if you type in Fairgrounds Racing. It's on the Fairgrounds website, fgno.com. On their racing page, I believe they have a link to all the podcasts. We've done four already. The one dropped yesterday for the Champions Day. It's about 45 minutes long, and we touch on all seven stakes races. No, we didn't touch on the quarter horse races because, I mean, look, there's only so much you can do, right?
Well, and I was going to ask you, how often do you partake in the quarter action?
Right around none. So,
all
mean,
right.
Look, it's hard enough trying to find a winner with thoroughbreds. I mean, quarter horses, good Lord.
Well, there's three of them that start the day, and 350, 400, and 440.
Yeah. AJ Peretti, who was the Equibase chart caller for years up in the press box. He had a thing about these quarter horse races at Fairgrounds. The way that their dirt is, and it's got kind of a turtle back to it, outside posts are deadly in quarter horse races at Fairgrounds. I don't know why this is. I don't know if it's just maybe harder, like that sand padded down more at the top. But watch tomorrow how many outside posts win going down the straightaway in these quarter horse races. He used to pound them pretty good. We're like, well, look at this. So every year it seems like the ones on the outside have a little bit of – that's all I can tell you about the quarter horse races.
No, that's valuable information. And it might be, you know, it could be that that's got something to do with the crown and
yep.
maybe some footing. And, you know, that's all that, you know, that the further you go down toward the rail, you know, maybe a little deeper and you know, they've got to be much the best. As it happens, it just so happens, just looking at the morning line, a lot of the lower prices happen to be outposted in that sequence as it happens. 3-1 favorite in the first runaway second down is favored, and you got a 4-1 and a 5-1 in the second, and you got the 7-2 favorite in the third stake that is favored. So there are some logicals that are on the outside. Let's talk about some of the highlights. And there are some very familiar names for those of you that are, you know, even marginal Louisiana bred fans. The most notable being Hours to Run, who is so terrific. And I Larry Jones, whenever I see Larry, I always ask him how she's doing. And Hours to Run in the ladies that goes as the seventh.
Yeah, I think that race is fantastic. That could be the best race on the card with her and Minute to Stardom. They matched up in that grade two race up at Saratoga, and Minute to Stardom, Evelyn Benoit's Philly got the best ever that day at 20-1. And I think those two are going to put on a show tomorrow. I really do. But Hours to Run, you know, she's beat Minute to Stardom every time they raced in a live bred company. The only time she lost to her was in an open company in the grade two. So, I think those two are really going to put on a show. It's kind of like a big 2.5 in there, right? You got Minute to Stardom for Jose Camejo and Hours to Run, and then Midnight Fantasy, trained by Joe Sharps, the two. Maybe get lost a little bit on the board. Mike's got him 7-2 in the morning line. She's been managed pretty well. I mean, she was a 2-year-old Lobbred Philly champ last year, and this is the first time against Older coming up tomorrow, which, you know, he's managed her very well throughout the year, kept her in 3-year-old company. She's 4-9 lifetime. I think she's got an outside play. But actually, Steve, you know, the one horse in that race, Play Unified, we talked about this on the podcast. What about Play Unified, first time out at Saratoga in 2015, you broke her maiden, first time out, I believe it was for George Weaver. Do you know she beat in that race that day at Saratoga, one of those salty maiden special weights?
I remember the win, and I remember, you know, the excitement about her, it's too far back now.
It's too far back. It's a different time code, right? She beat Paola Queen, who ran like fifth in that race, came back the next year for Gustavo Delgado and won the test.
Yeah.
At a big price. And so, you know, Labrad's got a little bit of class, but it seems like a different lifetime ago for this one. And I don't know what price you're going to get on her. Fauché is just, I mean, he's hot as a firecracker. He can't lose. He even got Kent DeSormo off the duck yesterday. speaking about how good Foshay's going. He's leading trainer right now. He's got a bunch in this weekend. He's gonna jump ahead a little more because these lot breds this weekend, obviously Brad Cox and some of those other guys don't have a bunch of those kind of horses here. So, you know, maybe as an outsider, the one play unified, but I really think you're going to see the 3 and the 4 minutes of stardom and hours to run put on the show tomorrow.
Jump around to wherever you want to go and talk about either some of the, whether it's a heavy favorite that could be reliable or vulnerable, or, you know, some of the upsetters that caught your eye as you went through this card.
Yeah, you know, talking to some guys yesterday, it seems like the eighth race, the juvenile, some people will tell you Chimney Rock is a layover, going to be 4 to 5, 3 to 5 maybe, and is the most likely winner in the card. I don't think so. I think that race, you know, Chimney Rock certainly has a lot of class, finished second that sprint in the Breeders' Cup and has run really, really well on the turf. But that race is full of speed in that race, the eighth race is Champions Day Juvenile. I kind of like Binding Agreement in there for Alstall. The horse won first time out over the opening day weekend. And also Pickens is a horse for Steve Asmussen that I think, you know, there's a lot of musical jockeys going on in this race. Pickens, you know, Pickens, he got this jock change from Mitchell Merle to Bridge Mahan. Every horse in there has speed except Pickens and Chimney Rock. So I don't know what kind of fractions you're going to get up top. I kind of lean on Pickens, though, because Chimney Rock, that one race he ran against on the dirt first time out, just wasn't very good. And I tried to go by Mike Maker's barn yesterday to see where Relentless Dancer is. That's a 2-year-old labrad that was very good at Churchill, broke his maiden, and then came back in a Delta Stakes race a few weeks ago and won by 10.5 at Delta. And Maker's got that horse, too, which would have fit perfect in here. Hasn't had a workout since then, so I'm not sure where that one is right now, if it's on the shelf for a little while. But, you know, Chimney Rock's going to get bet down. I think that's a good play against tomorrow. If you can find somebody else to use in there, you can maybe get a price. I heard you mention about a $100 horse usually pops up on these kind of cards. If it does pop up tomorrow, I can guarantee you it'll be in a turf race. We saw one yesterday on the turf. It hit the fairgrounds, paid $98. With that rail out 24 feet, you get a lot of crazy things happening. Be prepared to maybe use a few, you know, use a few in those races, especially the 9th and the 11th. The 9th race is the Champions Day turf. You know, I kind of went for a horse in there, Jimmy Graham at 12-1, a Fleet Ascent. I think this horse is back to doing what it wants to do. Going to be dangerous on the front end. Speed's pretty well been holding the last couple of weeks out there on the turf. And so if this horse gets loose, 12-1, I think you'll see that horse float up too, because who knows where the board's going to go in this race. But, you know, you got a full 11-horse field in that race in the 9th, and in the 11th race, you got 3 also eligible. You're going to have 11 horses in there. If there's a bomb anywhere, I think it's going to be in one of those two races.
It's so funny that you reached for that, because I was going to ask you about the 11th, because this seems like a very, very well-matched group. You've got a full gate, and you know, they're going 1 1/16. These are the ladies' turf, and I looked up and down this group. there, you know, the one thing about it, there's not, I suppose, I don't know, 10 pins tempo, has taken leads in races, and Mr. Al's Gal for Jose Camejo, 9-2. Tepin's tempo is 12-1, but what's unclear is where the pace is coming from in here.
No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. I think you'll see the Catalano horse take money, room to finish. The West Point horse, those West Point horses always seem to take some money.
Yeah.
Had a nice win opening weekend here on the turf, so you know that one likes the turf. And you know, on the podcast, we talk about betting angles at the fairgrounds, and every track's quirky with certain betting angles. And one of the angles that's really, really strong here is second time on the turf. When a horse goes second time on the turf here at fairgrounds, it seems like they improve multiple lengths. And it's something you can easily look at in the PPs. You know, you can find where a horse raced first time out on the fairgrounds turf, and then look what it did second time out. It just seems like those horses jump up and get a hold of it better and get over it better. And Room to Finish kind of falls in that category. I think it's between the 2 and the 9 in there is 2. Colby Hernandez, who also had an unbelievable week last week, and he's sitting on top of the jockey standings. He's actually the only jock on the card that rides in every race on Saturday, every thoroughbred race on Saturday. For Eddie Johnston, I think if you beat one of those two, if you beat the 2 or the 9, you're gonna be sitting pretty in there, because there's just a lot of question marks up and down the card. I mean, Eskin for More comes off that River City's win at Louisiana Downs last out, at 30-1. If you missed him that day, do you really want him today at 5-1? I'm not sure. She's 6 years old now. So for James Hodges, Sweet Hodges, and Jimmy Graham, who rides the turf course here pretty well. But, you know, Room to Finish is two. I think those two are going to be the ones at the top. You beat them, though, you're going to get paid.
You know, and as you talk about second-time Fairgrounds turf, I mean, part of it may be that given the configuration of the oval, that, you know, because the stretch is so long, and of course, 1,208 feet on the main track. And so, you know, one of the things that anybody watching racing at Fairgrounds notices is that, you know, you get that second camera angle coming up the stretch, and it's got to be, if it's not the longest of its kind on a true oval, it's certainly one of the longer. And I imagine that, you know, if a horse doesn't expect where the wire is, they might learn it. I mean, it's got to be very different for horses that are used to a wire coming up faster off of a turf course turn.
It is. And if you're in a clubhouse and your horse is on the lead in the stretch on that turf course, you hear a lot of people start yelling, wire, wire, wire. It seems like it takes forever to get there.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes forever, yeah. And you know, I think it actually affords, on the main track, I say mostly because of that long stretch, but it affords the jockeys to be patient, and they can afford to make a couple of mistakes, if you know what I mean. I mean, they can afford to try things in a race that you really can't try when you got a short stretch. Because ultimately, you know, it seems like the best horse will find its way through or get out in time and get up in time. And you see that a lot when you know, in the third race, you see, you get in the stretch, you're like, man, my horse is trapped, is he going to get out? And the stretch is just so long, eventually, you know, they find a hole, and usually a guy like Corey Lannery or Adam, you know, Bashitsa, they get up in time, and that's one thing about the Fairground stretch that you're afforded.
You know, I haven't looked deeply yet, but one horse in that 11th race that might be worth a glance. Lee Thomas sends a 20-1 Marywood, and she's a 3-year-old facing elders, and so she is getting, in some cases, she's getting 9 pounds. And that was a very nice performance in that allowance win, which just came, 10 days ago? Well, a little bit more, maybe 2 weeks ago. I think Marywood might be sneaky in here.
I mean, look, it's turf races, Fairgrounds. Lee Thomas also has the 4 in there, and you know, he's got that other horse angle, right? The trainer with two of them in there, and the higher priced one seems to always beat the lower priced one. And certainly, you know, she's got to win. She's got to win over the Fairgrounds turf course. She's right. She could be dangerous. It's really, look, Fairgrounds, the turf races, it seems like, she can win just as much as any of them can.
He's got 10 Pins Tempo, who I mentioned, is also cross-entered, though, right?
Right.
So we'll see.
I'm not sure which way they're going to go. I don't know which way they're going to go with Star Fitzall either, which is very interesting because Star Fitzall for Jose Camejo is in the 10th and the 9th and the 10th. And he drew outside in the 9th in that race. And I think that's where they're probably going to scratch. That one's a full brother to Minute to Stardom, actually. So long on the turf, I wouldn't think that horse is going to do that. Actually, I think the horse really wants to sprint. But, I mean, they got him entered in. Long on the turf in the 9th, and then they got him in the 10th, which is the Champions Day Classic, the mile in the 8th. I would imagine they would go in that spot. Not sure, though. We'll see what happens. But actually, if he does come out of the 9th race, there goes the speed in that race, too. So I really think if he scratched Star Fitzall, the 11 in the 9th race makes me like the 4 even more.
How about let's get the Classic in before we wrap up, and mile in an 8th. 3 and ups, of course, and this is interesting. I there's a couple of high profile Louisiana breds that might have been involved here, and it kind of leaves things a little bit more open for, you know, some of the locals, some of the Delta and Evangeline and so forth, the types. Who'd he make favorite here? Trevilian for Arsenault.
Yeah, he's 7-2. That's kind of the new shooter, right? You like that word, new yep. shooter? Don't you like that?
No, I don't.
I swear, I just came up. I just thought about it. But yeah. They made that horse favorite, you know, the Trevilian. I made that horse favorite in open company last time at Delta, in the Delta Mile. 3-year-old, and I don't, you know, that horse could be okay. And they're under pressure. You know, Mike's got a 5-2 in the morning line. This horse has made almost 600,000 for Chris Richard. Second off the layoff here, actually won this race in the flop last year. So I think, you know, you see people kind of gravitate toward him. You know, Grand Basin, Eddie Johnson. I love Eddie Johnson, but this horse is 1-15 dating back to last year. Made a lot of money running against Louisiana Breds. I don't think tomorrow is going to be his day. But it's an interesting race. A lot of, you know, a lot of horses make a lot of money in this race. And pound for pound, if you look at this horse, I think this horse is really sneaky. We talked about him a little bit in detail on the podcast. Third off the layoff, kind of under the radar connections, Aubrey Green rides, 10-1. I think that's going to go up in this race. And I think, you know, looking at this, there's not a lot of speed in here either. So, you know, Aubrey Green, if that track's fast tomorrow, I think, you know, she could take him a long way and get brave with this horse pound for pound.
Andrea Green and Andrea Ally trains. I got to mention this. McGee's, the Del Caldwell Musket Man, 6-year-old, out of a spectacular bid mare. And rarely do we see spectacular bid mares anymore. So she, her name was Spasiba, which is Russian, and Pajalsta. For those of you that know the please and thank you when you're in the former Soviet Union, I just have to mention. Usually, we only see spectacular bid mares in New York anymore. I mean, the way, you know, at the end of his stallion career, and there's a few, you know, there's a few that show up, but I can't remember the last time I saw one.
You never know what you're going to find in a Louisiana bred pedigree, Steve. Never know.
I love it. Never know. I love it. Well, delighted that we could catch up with you. I know you've heard the discussion. We're not making Risen Star because of Mardi Gras, but we're set. In fact, I was booking flights last night and this morning, and looking forward to a Louisiana Derby trip this year.
Oh, Louisiana coming down for the Derby, huh?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, yeah. That'd be great. I think the last weekend of the meet this year is going to be end of March. So that'll be great. Love to have you down here again.
Well, Chad, great to connect. Enjoy tomorrow, and best wishes for a Merry Christmas and for a great Sugar Bowl. You a Sugar Bowl goer?
Well, yeah, well, it's getting crazy down here, right? So you got the Sugar Bowl down here, and then a week later you got the national championship, and the way LSU's playing. And you got the football, the crazies, the LSU people are all out and all happy because, you know, their team could possibly make it to the national championship game, which is in the Superdome the week after the Sugar Bowl this year. So, you
crazy.
Know, them with the Saints, the way the Saints are playing, you know, they should have a home playoff game. It could be there's actually a shot that the Saints could play a home playoff game on that Saturday, and the national championship could be that Monday. So the bar owners here are going to make a lot of money if that happens that weekend.
How about that? You're our go-to, and everybody should check out the Chad's podcast. For those of you following Fairgrounds and the meet off, you know, to a nice start, and well worth checking out the cards at NOLA. Chad, thanks so much.
Steve, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to you and Tina, and we'll talk soon.
You got it, Chad. Schecksnader, everybody, and you should also follow Chad. Schecks NOLA, Schecknola. Chad, of course, at one time did a lot of the media work at Fairgrounds and is a staple every day at Fairgrounds and a great resource. Let's take a break. A little past the top of the hour, Nick Tamaro going to join us. We'll get Nick in here. We got Hammer. We got Ed. We got two Eds. We're going to have an Ed Daily double. DeRosa and Burgard. How about that? Mike Welch on the first big graded state card of the winter at Gulfstream. And Jeff Siegel, too. Back after this with Nick.
The latest-
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sun on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
It was a night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. My baby came home. I asked her where she was. She grinned and said that she was out of with old Santa Claus. Oh, there's trouble brewing now. Oh, yeah, well, there's trouble brewing now. Oh, yeah. The snow is white, so crisp and white. But there's trouble brewing tonight.
We're back at the races. Coming up on 15 into hour two. Going to have baby's first Christmas in the Tamaro household.